Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
It's Pharrell on a bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out the bad seat, a broken eight, a bad double with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad actors, bad taste, bad luck, bad dude, bad rep, bad attitude, bad vibes. It's the FOTB pod, baby. You heard me talking about surfing, big waves, all the best surfers ever, all the best spots in the world. And I was even talking about Andy Irons and Kelly Slater's bitter rivalry in surfing for world championships. And everybody knows Kelly Slater won 11 world championships. At least I know it. I've told you that. So I got to the point where I lost track how many he won. But there was a run that Andy Irons had, and he won three of them. And this guy was on top of the world, and he was beating Slater. And when he was a kid, that was his hero. That's who he wanted to be, because Slater had come out of Florida and took the surfing world by storm. And meanwhile, Andy Irons was this kid from Kauai, and his brother Bruce, the two of them became pro surfers, and from a very young age, you could tell that they had it, that they had something special about them. But the story that I've already done on the FOTB about big waves and about these two hating each other and everything else, and then finally coming to grips with one another, and actually, I think, going to Indonesia and being friends, the story's so much deeper than that. I never knew until one of those epiphanies. You learn something new every day, right? So what I didn't know about Andy Irons was how his life turned out and what happened to him. And really, this is that story. It's just crazy. I mean, you can't even describe in words what going to the top of the surfing world meant to him, and then really crash and burn, and then eventually disaster. This is that story, and it really is unbelievable. So it was too good for one show. So this delves deeper into their war and into Andy's world. And I didn't know all this stuff about him, like that he was bipolar and that he had just massive struggles with that and depression and mood swings and temper and drugs and alcohol. I mean, drugs like you have no idea. Opioids through the roof, blow, weed, liquor, beer. I mean, you name it, he did it all. I mean, to rock star levels, Keith Richards levels. So this story just gets crazy. You got to hear it to appreciate it. And they did a movie about it, Kissed by God. And it was the story of Andy Irons. Here he is at the beginning of it.
You ever heard of being kissed by God? This is pretty much what it is. For those 10, 3, 2, 1 second, it's like God came down and gave you a kiss. And then you just chase that the whole rest of your life, trying to get that first wave or the first barrel or that first turn. Sometimes, but you always are going to go back and try to do it better and do it longer or do it higher or go farther. And that's why I'm so lucky to have surfing. It keeps me going in a normal state. It keeps my life at an even keel. Without it, it would just tip into oblivion. So just being kissed by God.
And I mean, this thing just gets so deep. I mean, to tell you, literally, I was gushing watching this flick. Just absolutely gushing. I had to take breaks so I could go blow my schnoz, because I was literally just bawling watching this. It's just crazy. And this is his brother, Bruce, and they were literally inseparable from childhood, from 3 years old. One of them was a year and a half older than the other one. Andy was the older brother. Bruce was the little brother. And this is him getting interviewed for this documentary movie about Andy. And bottom line is, Andy died. And how he died is really the most depressing thing I think I've ever heard. Here's Bruce.
My name's Bruce. My name's Bruce Irons. Andy Irons was my brother. This is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. I never thought I'd be here, having to talk about my brother. But It is what it is, and here I go. Who was Andy Irons? Andy Irons to me was my older brother, my hero. He's the person that made me who I am. My brother was a very interesting person. You know, he had a lot of things going on in his mind, good and bad. My brother was unorthodox, wild. You never knew what you're gonna get.
Looking into the camera, looking at you.
I'm Andy Irons, 27 years old, been surfing for 20 years, live on Lake Kauai.
Andy Irons, your last score, a perfect 10.
Surfing's my life, 100%. I live and breathe surfing.
Is he coming out? Yeah!
Every generation of surfers has a pool of great talent. But within that pool, there are normally one, maybe two, who rise above and come to represent that era of surfing. They define it.
Andy had something special inside him. You know, Andy had something to prove.
One of the greatest, badass, rags to riches, rock star, people's champion, surfers that ever lived.
He came from nothing, and he never forgot that.
He sure didn't. I mean, to tell you, this guy, he was the Van Halen of surfing. He just took over the world and everybody loved him. The fans, everyone from Hawaii, he was their favorite son. I mean, this guy was King Tutankhamun. I mean, badass central. I mean, right from the jump, these two were hitting the water and getting surfboards.
So they were a handful right from the start with both of them.
We're like 7 or 8 and Christmas comes around and we got surfboards.
First wave I ever caught, I remember to this day, clear as day, I went left, right, left. And from that day on, I told my dad every night, I want to go surfing, I want to go surfing, I want to go surfing.
From that day, we were both hooked.
And they were good as kids, too. Believe me, they could surf at a young age. I love hearing Bruce talk about their childhood.
Me and my brother had a really interesting relationship. You know, we never showed signs of affection or weakness towards each other. Because that was the way we were raised. And, you know, a lot of people saw me and my brother as being real competitive, which we were. You know, a lot of times we were violent with each other, but that's the way it was for me and my brother growing up. That's how we pushed each other. But no matter how much me and my brother went at it, you know, I never ever wanted to see him in pain or hurt.
Which is pretty kick-ass when you think about it. Then he talked about him getting into surfing.
When Kelly Slater Black and White came out, that was the video. That was the video that we watched over and over and over. You'd watch that video and we'd go out and we'd try to surf and try to do reverses, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be on that TV. We met Liam McNamara and Garrett, and they rode for Willis Brothers Phasers, you know? And they saw us surfing, called my dad up and go, hey, I know you don't know us, but your kids surf good, and hey, we want to sponsor them for Willis Brothers Surfboards. We'll fly him over to Oahu. We'll take him surfing. And my dad's just like, all right, they'll be on a flight.
Most of the heavy competition was Oahu based then. And they knew to take their game up, as Phil knew, that they had to be here on Oahu to face the Oahu kids.
They were still in grammar school. And I'd send them to Riddle on a Friday night. You know, and then Dave would send them back to me on Sunday. And then Monday, they'd go to school.
This is Bruce Irons getting a nice ride, and check out the finishing floater right there. Older brother Andy didn't want to be shown up, so he got in one of the best rides of the day. Check out the aerial right there. Nice one.
And my brother was always winning. You know, he was kind of unstoppable.
Andy Irons in the blue. Getting his spits out. Andy Irons in the blue.
We started getting paid when we were young. I was like 13 or something. Volcom gave me a contract for, you know, a good amount of money. I think then Quicksilver started paying my brother also.
They just started making money at a young age. They were in middle school and they were getting paid fat money to surf, and their dad let them, and that's Gandhi. So when he was 17, Andy Irons was sponsored by MCD and they were paying him 120 grand then. Who do you know making that kind of cheddar at that age doing anything athletically besides no one?
As we got older, you know, coming from what we came from, and then all of a sudden, you get all these sponsors and all this money, and It's new. It's not this little island. We're in the real world, going around the world, surfing all these spots, all these parties, all these attention. You know, for him, it was a lot more intense, the world on his shoulders. You know, for me, it was, oh, I got my older brother. He's the man. He's the bullseye. And I'm just like protected by him. And, you know, that's, I really like that, you know? Like, I couldn't handle that pressure that he had.
He had way more pressure because he was already a few steps way above Bruce. Bruce didn't have anything to stress out about. It was Andy's world, and he was the one that was a rising star, and Bruce was the young little brother that was still a badass, but he wasn't on that kind of stage and level yet. And they were getting popular on TV. They were doing national television stories about these two brothers. Incredible that they were already on CNN at their age. So then they were in Australia, surf event, his first pro event, and Andy did terribly, and then he stayed behind. Everybody else kept going on to the next events, and he showed up a couple days later and had dyed his hair and started acting bizarre, and they were all noticing that he was changing.
He's just looking right through me. He's going, it's all right, brother, it's all right. Just these eyes, these eyes, it just pierce right through you. I was like, oh my God, my brother is gone. He's gonna have to go to a loony bin. He's out of his mind. But then, as all this is going on, he'd go surf the box and catch every wave and get the deepest barrels and like have the ultimate session. And he's completely out of his mind. He's out there in the water, like biting at people, like just cuckoo.
So these things started happening to Irons, and they obviously started picking up on it, his friends, his brother, his family. So he was so messed up that he went back to Hawaii and got off the tour for a year. And everybody was tripping out about him, including his childhood friend Logan.
The first time Andy really opened up and told me about the bipolar thing, I really just don't think he believed it. And I just think he was not ready to pay attention to it at all.
You know, it was really hard for him. That was, you know, until then, you really never even knew about it. You know, I mean, it was such still a new thing.
I'd heard about it, and we touched on it, and there was medication for a while, and then not. So Andy once told me that he didn't like the meds, you know, and he just did it his own way.
Yeah, he wasn't going to take the meds. He's like, screw this. I got this under control. So another pro surfer, Shane Dorian, talked about how Andy was dealing with being bipolar.
It was the first time I'd ever really been close to somebody who was pretty extremely bipolar. He didn't seem to have any control of it. He didn't seem like he had, you know, medication that really worked or anything like that. It was like, you know, when it hit, he couldn't see it coming. It was just something that would just grab him, and that was it. You know, it was like he was getting pulled underwater, and there was nothing he could do about it.
What could be worse than that? I mean, honest to God. So they all moved, ended up going over to Pipeline, and that was their new surfing hub. When they were home in Hawaii, that's where they went to, and that place is radical and dangerous, and they don't like foreigners, outsiders, mainlanders, or visitors.
Pipeline, to me, it's like the, you know, the center of surfing. It's always been the spot everyone watches. It's the place in the magazines, and a lot happening in a condensed area.
People are from around the world are all surfing Pipeline, and it's becoming very crowded and very dangerous. People are burning each other. People die out there, you know, so there is no order.
I'm not gonna ram through the crosswalk when there's people crossing. You don't wanna go out the Pipeline and drop in on everybody. It's the same, it's just life.
A lot of our friends came over there from Kauai. Like, they started kind of cracking the whip, and a lot of them were big, gnarly, tough guys that no one's gonna step to. I don't know, the North Shore, I think, needed it.
Welcome to Pipeline. Now go home. It's all good.
The Wolfpack, I guess, is a foundation of all the islands coming together, protecting Hawaii from everybody else who's coming here. All you guys, you.
We never called ourselves the Wolfpack. Somebody else called us that, and it just stuck, but we are all Kauai boys. And that's what we saw ourselves as.
Yeah, it was family, you know? It was people that my brother didn't worry about. Those were our boys, you know what I mean? And my brother, he had no reason to fight, you know? He was really good at what he did, and no one fucked with him.
Because he was such a badass, but if you messed with these dudes, the locals, the dudes from there, they just weren't having it. And they would gang up on everyone and beat their asses. So then they end up in Indonesia and everything starts going badly quickly.
It was my brother's 21st birthday. And they went on a boat trip to Indo. At that time, he was pretty, you know, kind of out there still. And when he drinks, you know, he'd be even more out there. You know, he's drinking Jack Daniels. It's my 21st birthday, you know, just out of control. I think they, you know, they had morphine or something. So my brother saw a line and, you know, I don't know, he thought it was coke or something. Sniffed it, and it was a line of morphine. And Nathan Fletcher kind of grabbed my brother and, you know, brought him into a room, laid him in bed, and just like, all right, I'll watch him, you know, because he's just out of control. And periodically you'd hear this, like, this, you know, sleep apnea thing, like his whatever, you know, clear his throat. You know, after a while, you know, Nathan didn't notice this pattern.
I realized he wasn't waking up, so I grabbed him by the hair, smacked him in the face, as, you know, I guess what you do, and then his eyes just, like, rolled in his head, and he wasn't breathing, he wasn't there.
The ambulance showed up, you know, there was, you know, he was still lifeless, still white, blue lips, you know, like, you know, but there was a little pulse. So, you know, they put him in the ambulance, and as they got to the hospital, they're like, oh, where's our friend at? You know, they just came in, they're like, oh, your friend's. He kept slipping in and out of life, you know, on the drive there, his lung collapsed. He's in intensive care. He flatlined for, you know, 8 minutes, dead.
Bottom line is that Andy Irons was dead for 8 minutes. I just love his perspective on everything, Andy Irons.
Usually once I get in the water and come back out, I feel a lot better no matter what's going on. It's almost like therapy or something. You can be having the worst day ever, go out and have a good session, come in, everything seems all right. So to say surfing's a part of my life is way too small and minuscule. It's been there for me through good, bad, parents getting divorced, don't matter, brother being a parent, it don't matter. You go surfing and you do a good turn, then it feels good as your first turn. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps me going back in the water, hoping to keep that feeling, you know, going.
Like when he snapped out of that whole being kind of crazy part of his life, you know, like it's like the brain was a Rubik's Cube and it all just kind of came back together. For, I don't know, you know what I mean? Because he was so scattered and so out there. And then all of a sudden he's winning heats. And how? I don't know.
It was like instantaneous. He went from like the least confident guy in the world, who was getting drunk after every loss and being a total idiot, to like all of a sudden he was like full-on world champion material. He was the biggest threat at every event.
Then he was winning every world championship and every event and just kicking everyone's ass every single time they had an event. I think that's the difference with the bipolar. You have these tremendous downs and these unbelievable ups. There's no middle. It's just you're either down in the dumps and ready to kill yourself, allegedly, or you're completely lit, fired up, and partying, and on top of your game, and radical, and let's go take over the world. You have extreme intensity when you're fine, and then when you're down in the dumps, I mean, you're on death's doorstep. I mean, it's just crazy watching this guy's moods. One day he's laying in his bed and won't leave for 3 days, and the next thing you know, he's out winning every single surfing event and kicking ass and taking names, and everybody's jealous of him because he's shredding and he's just taking all the money and all the chicks. Check out. Ooh.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? SportsGrid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, SportsGrid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is SportsGrid. Get on the grid.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, he started making all kinds of money, too. His dad even started talking about it.
You know, they were really generous. He really provided a lot of things for people that just got lucky to be there. But they were the pro servers with the money and the hanger-oners and all the bad that comes with success. You know, you have to be able to filter it through and not have it come in and stomp on you. And both of them got stomped on.
My brother loved getting people paid or get, you know, loved throwing the party, like loved spreading it. And there was a lot of hands out, you know, a lot of hands were out. You know, everyone wanted to be a part of our show. Shit, they loved it. They marketed it. People ended up marketing Wolfpack. Everyone kind of started realizing, hey, we all can make money here. And a lot of people got jobs. A lot of people got sponsored. A lot of money flew our way, not just to me and my brother, but it flew to all of our friends.
Why not? Everybody needs a piece, right? If your friend's making millions, give me a chunk, son. So he wins his first world title. Then he's back in Kauai, and you'd think he'd be happy. And they catch up with the dude, and he seems miserable.
How has these pressures affected your surfing?
Sometimes I'll get weird thoughts through my head, like, you're the world champ, and you gotta surf good every single wave. You can't fall off, stuff like that. But I try not to get too caught up on those and just be like, just a surfer like everyone else and just want to have fun. Get really moody lately. Jackie, you know. It's just something, I don't know. It's just a lot of thoughts, a lot of just stuff going on. And I just try not to let it get to me, but I'm just only human. It just gets to me sometimes and get overwhelmed and try not to get overwhelmed, but it's hard. And just trying to deal with it the best I can. I just need something to get me all fired up again and stuff
like that,
you know.
Here he is, world champ, and he doesn't seem like he has any happiness at all with it. He's worried about losing it, I guess, starting to trip out. He found what he was looking for, though.
Lindy came along, you know, they met my brother's birthday, July 24th. You know, it was after my brother had his first world title, and my brother fell deeply in love with Lindy. From that day that he saw her, that night, you know, he never let her go.
It was just really instant attraction, chemistry. And he was wild and funny, and I liked all that. He told me he loved me after like 3 weeks in front of my best friend, so he was definitely full on. I didn't know that he was in the middle of a world title race, but he just seemed on top of the world and happy and just, you know, full of life. When we started dating, he asked me to go on a couple trips, I remember, but I was really, it was just overwhelming. But when you date a surfer on tour, you travel with them and date. You don't stay at home and like go out to dinner. You kind of have to go on the road with them and get to know them. And I didn't get that in the beginning. I was like, whoa, you're crazy, like wanting to take me places. It's called the Dream Tour for a reason, I guess. It was a dream life. It was solid 2-3 years of just rock star life, just traveling around the world first class and, you know, doing whatever we wanted. Like, it was amazing. It was fun. A kid ever came up to him and asked for an autograph or a picture, it was never even like a question of what we were doing. He would stop and do it. He's felt almost safe and I think unjudged by kids. You know, he was completely himself and silly.
He was on fire on tour, now he found his new love, and it was just like he was unstoppable.
I mean, to tell you too, this chick was smoking hot. Lindy was something else, just absolutely gorgeous, and he seemed like he was on top of the world, and he was happy, and he had a smile on his face and a hop in his step. I mean, the guy was on top of the world, and then he had a chick now. So then the war with Kelly Slater and Andy Irons really picked up at the 2003 World Championship. He knew, Slater, that the only guy he had to worry about in surfing was Andy Irons.
Two of the greatest surfers ever going against each other, both with this will to win that to this day I haven't seen.
Andy Irons, ladies and gentlemen, the winner.
Number one in the world.
It's on. No pressure.
He's out.
So maybe you just lost. So how do you feel?
I lost. How do you think I feel? Not good.
He would just look at it and go, I should never lose. You know, I'm going to take Kelly's dream and smash it. I don't even know if I even said what my dream was. He just was going to figure out what I was before me and kill it, you know?
My whole driving force right now is to take his little pretty picture and just crush it.
Now I need to get to work. That's all.
But now we see Kelly's ladder.
I'll hurry up. I'm out of here.
I think it's one of the greatest rivalries in sports. For the first time in a long time, you know, something that resembled like the old Lakers-Celtics rivalries, and you had to sort of pick a side.
Started this rivalry thing, and I started getting into the character and just kind of going, you know what, yeah, fuck Kelly. He wasn't the guy I grew up looking up to anymore. He was the guy that I wanted to beat more than anything, that wanted nothing better than to leave him on the beach with a loss.
How do you feel about Andy going out in the first round?
I feel great about it. Sure he doesn't.
They were just going back and forth, first, second, and after every event, my brother's just like, next event, you know, like all the way down to Pipeline. That was nuts, you know?
And it came down to the Pipeline final event in 03.
It was coming down to the North Shore. Whoever placed one higher was going to win the world title.
You know, half of Kauai was there. He had a great base of people around him. Everything was in his court.
You know, people say that Andy carried all of Hawaii by himself. The pressure that builds up skyrocketed. It was incredible to watch.
And my brother would get a good one, just roar. You know, my brother could hear that. My brother could feed off that.
That was the part of surfing that was missing, you know. That was the part where the rivalry was thicker than actually just going surfing.
I would literally look at Andy or think about him or dream about how to beat him and all this stuff. And you know, for whatever reason, Andy and I did that to each other. I know he did that to me.
That was Slater talking.
More than anything, wanted to crush Kelly, especially at home in Hawaii in front of all the boys. That pressure, you know, it was probably going nuts in his head.
North Shore Showdown, the final will begin in 5 minutes. Go out there, guys. Good luck.
The guy came up to me before the final at the Hawaii Masters 2003. Biggest heat of the year, the final, right before it all goes down, comes up to me, pats me on the back. You know, I just want to let you know I love you like a brother. Right before the biggest heat of my life. Like, what?
I definitely think Kelly played my trips on Andy. Definitely. You know, Andy fed off that.
And gee, who do you think won on his home beach? Andy Irons did, son. It was Andy's second world title. It showed Andy partying with all the locals from Hawaii, and then they show Slater just devastated with his girlfriend or something, and it was just two different worlds.
I did it. I can't believe it.
Where are you at, Steve?
The script was written.
He like set up a party for all of us who just wanted to go from Richter, which we did, and he's like, nah, man, I'm good. Like, you know, my brother just wanted to be with Lindy.
Nobody else. Thank you. Hey, come on.
He wanted to just sit there and, you know, soak up what he just accomplished.
So he did the whole thing with Bipolar, won another championship. It's just unbelievable. And then he could be on top of the mountain and then be in hell 5 minutes later. In 2004, he won his third world title. In 2005, Irons went for his fourth straight world championship, and the pressure was on him big time to keep answering the bell.
You know, after Andy won those three world titles, and then the next year was came down to that heat at Jay Bay where Kelly and Andy in the final, and that was the heat that determined the world title at the end of the year.
He was the one who had everything to lose in 2005, not me. I hadn't won a world title in 7 years. You know, I'm bald, I'm over the hill. I mean, he's told me all these things, I'm a kook. Okay, if I'm over the hill and I beat you, then this is gonna crush you. Andy's last wave, he got like an 8, and he rode all the way down the point, but he didn't do a whole lot on the wave. He just kind of did like a lot of up and downs, but nothing big.
Andy rode the wave
all the way down the beach. You couldn't find out where he was when he came back up the beach. He rode this wave all the way down there, and then Kelly needed the score.
Like, okay, Kelly, you need a 9.3 or whatever it is. I remember standing up, and I just went, this is the wave. This is clearly the best wave that has come in this heat. And so I did, like, I think I did four turns and fell in the fifth. It was like, should have made that. It's teetering on the edge.
And Slater got the 9.5 and beat him, and he wiped out on his fifth turn. Meanwhile, Irons had rode a wave all the way down the shore, and he got screwed with a crappy score, so the judges Pharrelled him over. There's just no doubt about it. So after he got screwed by the judges for his fourth straight title, he really went off the deep end.
After the end of that year, you know, yeah, my brother's dark side started creeping more into his everyday life. A little bit of partying kind of turned into a lot of partying, and all of a sudden he wouldn't be surfing for a couple days. A couple days turned into a week could turn into 2 weeks. Like, we kind of just started going on vacay mode, you know?
People with bipolar disorder do all sorts of things to try to help themselves. And in seeking relief from that severe anxiety, they're prone to sort of go overboard with a lot of the drugs.
I drank differently than other people. I took drugs differently. They were doing it to have fun. I was doing it to be more normal. Because, you know, when you have this illness of anxiety, you say, finally, this is the drug that makes me the man I'm supposed to be. And you keep taking it, and you keep taking it, and then, however many years later, it stops working.
You know, when he was smoking weed when he was younger, he'd smoke a lot of weed. And then if it wasn't weed, you know, then drinking, a lot of drinking. You're doing coke, a lot of coke and drinking. And then the pills come, a lot of pills. And then once you get on this pill run, the pill run's a hard one to kick, and that's the one that grabbed a hold of my brother. Grabbed a hold of a lot of us. It took down a whole bunch of people.
I mean, they did tons of pills.
Beginning of the end for that big run that my brother had in the spotlight, that all of us had. Because, you know, my brother was doing good and winning, and he was healthy and solid. The light was shining bright on all of us. And as soon as my brother went down that dark road, we all went down that dark road.
What pill did you take?
Yellow.
Is that a yellow guy?
Yeah, right here. What I have here is we got the hydrocodone for the back. We have the Valiums for the sleeping disorder. Okay. And we have oxycodone. This is extremely, like, if you're in real big pain. Pharmaceutical grade.
You're really breaking down here.
Beginning in the mid-90s, when Purdue Pharma introduced a drug called OxyContin, it launched a campaign to increase prescribing of opioids.
Don't be afraid to take what they give you. Less than 1% of patients taking opioids actually become addicted.
Yeah, good luck with that.
From 1997 to 2011, there was a 900% increase in addiction to prescription opioids. When we talk about opioid pain medicine, we're essentially talking about heroin pills.
Your boy Andy was absolutely chewing OxyContins, and he just kept pounding more and more drugs and booze.
I think once he started that stuff, he was a different, changed him completely. Definitely changed him.
Everyone had their own addiction problem, and everyone was hiding it, and we all just turned into these closet case drug addict monsters, you know. And you could see it when you go down to Pine Trees, because it wasn't the same.
All I did was beg him to surf, because I thought that maybe surfing would make him happy. But it was far more than surfing that was torturing him mentally. I think he suffered in a lot of ways mentally that I don't understand. I always tried to understand, and I had so much compassion for, because I didn't understand what he was going through. He would tell me a lot that he wished that he could explain what's going on in his head. And I just laugh it off, like, okay, like, what do you mean? He's like, no, it's like, I wish I could explain to you how, what I see and what I'm thinking. And he's like, but I would scare you, or I don't even know how to explain it.
bottom line was, is that he was freaking out. I mean, his whole life, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. His bipolar was freaking him out. And then all he ever did was use and drink. And that was it. He didn't even care anymore about anything. Surfing. He just pretended like he loved her. He liked the drugs more. I think it's pretty apparent when I was watching it. Eventually wrote Lindy a note. I'm really sorry for the way I've been acting lately. I just have something wrong with me and it makes me so mad and I can't fix it, but I know how much I love you. I don't want to lose you. Love always, Andy. Like, he was writing her notes trying to save their marriage, relationship, whatever. At that time, I think they were still just dating. They were boyfriend and girlfriend at that time. He didn't want to lose her as a girlfriend. Eventually, they would get married. I mean, it gets a lot deeper than this. Even some of the stories that Bruce, his brother, tells. In 07 in Chile, he won an event completely coked out and pilled out and should have never won, but he won. And he didn't even know he was surfing. He was so high. But then Bruce talks about them partying.
During the Chile event, yeah, ended up in that room with me and my brother, drinking a lot and, you know, doing substances and shit. Just me and him, which we never really do together by ourselves, but we were kind of having a powwow. I remember being really drunk, and I just remember the last thing I remember before I, like, blacked out was him asking me out of the blue, like, are you afraid of dying? I was thinking, like, what the fuck? At the time, I'm like, yeah, I'm afraid of dying. And he goes, well, brother, there's nothing to be afraid about. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you remember when I died in Indo and I was on that table dead for like 8 minutes? He goes, I was out of my body and I was in this, the other side. And he goes, it's all real, you know? You know, the whole light, the tunnel, like, you know, I was in this other place and it was real nice and comfortable and warm. And he goes, it's all real. And he goes, there's nothing to be afraid about.
He was talking about dying and then going to bright light and maybe to the other side or to heaven. He was freaking his brother out a little bit there.
Want to light the lamp on DraftKings and FanDuel this NHL DFS season? Then join DailyRoto.com and learn from the best daily fantasy sports players. Get updated fantasy hockey projections for NHL DFS, line combinations, and build stacks for tournaments in the DailyRoto NHL DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy hockey without using DailyRoto, you are doing it wrong. Enter the promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
So he got married to Lindy, and then 2 days after he got married, he disappeared for a week, and everybody knew that he was on another bender. And then she talked about him still using and being on tour surfing while he was lit.
I remember him paddling out for a heat, and he couldn't even paddle into a wave, couldn't even catch a wave.
Taking a look at this. Let's
it go. Started doubting himself and doubting every move, even to his trunk colors, to like his board. He was so doubtful of himself. He cared so much about what the surfing world and like the public thought of him, instead of maybe just retiring and having a family and being happy. He was really worried about what people thought of him. Everyone thought it would be a good year to take off of the ASP, because when you win a world title, you're allowed to take a year off. He was very confused, didn't know what to do. He sat in our condo 2 months straight and didn't say a word. I'd scream and yell and just be like, just tell me you're okay or what can I do? I would do anything to try to get anything out of him, and it was nothing. Until he left one time and his... And that's when I got scared.
He was getting super creepy. She said, the wife, that he would beg her, don't tell anybody, don't ever talk about it to anybody ever, don't say a word. And she was like, I'd go to the grocery store acting like everything was fine. Meanwhile, I got a heroin addicted husband at home. Bottom line was, he was just munching oxys, 80 of them a day, and he was completely a vegetable. So he went to Australia for a year to get better, not in rehab, but just that there weren't pills there, and he went with all his best friends to just surf and chill and live and get right and get his head in a good place. She went, all of his best friends went, and they just went and lived. She said he came out of the darkness. She was pregnant. They were having a kid, a little boy. Everything was going right. He was surfing well again and just hitting kick-ass waves. And he was smiling. He was happy. He looked clean. He just wanted to come back in 2010 and win an event. And Andy talked about it.
I got lucky enough to take a year off. And now I'm coming back there, and I'm not as good as I was, and I have a lot of work to do, but I'm willing to go do that work. So realistically, I'm looking forward to just winning another contest. That'd be a big dream of mine. Get one more win. I'm just really putting my whole goal around one more win. If I get one more win before I quit surfing competition, I mean, I'm sure I'm gonna enjoy that win, I think, more than most of my wins I've ever had, just because it's been so long.
And that's all he really wanted, was to win one more time. And he did win again. He won in Te Apu, in Tahiti, and got what he wanted. Another win after all of his problems and layoffs and drugs.
He just seemed at this little bit of a ease for the first time that I've ever seen. He wasn't this raging, like, Andy, ferocious, competitive Andy. He was had this, like... almost ease about him.
Without that year off, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be winning contests at all. I'd be at home hanging out, and I'm stoked to be on tour, and I'm stoked to win a contest. My whole dream was just to win another contest. Anytime you get your name on the trophy, just feels, you know, it feels amazing. I won't lie, it feels amazing.
There you go. What more can you ask for? Even Andy talked about it, having the kid. It was due. She was about to burst.
Well, I guess it's kind of open-ended, but, like, what does the future hold?
For me? Kid. Future?
Biggest thing
is, you kidding me? I don't know what's coming, boy or girl. Either way, it's awesome. Either way, it's the next generation. Either way, it's my rebirth. Either way, it's something for me to be positive and motivated and... my brother has a kid, and it's cool to see just evolution. You can't be that psyched kid that all she lives for is one thing. You have to evolve. Surfing is the main priority of my life, but it's not the only priority. To me, surfing's something that makes me a better person. Surfing's the reason why I have this life I have. That's why I have this beautiful wife. I have a beautiful family. So... surfing is the main element, but what comes with it is a matter of what you make of it. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm just making making my own path.
There you go. I thought he had it all figured out at that point, right? Then things got really weird. Kelly Slater talked about it.
He came up to me and he goes, hey, can we talk? He's like, I feel like I got lucky to start over. And basically he just said, look, he goes, you know, you and I have had this crazy thing, and he goes, I want to make a movie with you, and I want to tell the whole story. You know, I want to take it to schools and tell kids how messed up I was. And he goes, even if I just change one kid's life, even if I can just change one kid's life, I'll feel like I'm a success in my life. And I said, man, you got my word. I'll do anything you want. I'll do whatever. But he goes, I'm stoked. I'm so stoked. He's like, I've never felt like this in my life. He goes, I didn't know I could feel like this. I never knew life could feel the way I feel right now.
Slater was devastated. He started crying. Then he went to Mexico, and in 5 minutes, he lost all his sobriety and relapsed. And he was like, I think smoking heroin and foil, the whole deal. So everybody started freaking out about him.
It was heartbreaking, and I know it was bummer. It was a bummer for him. But those pressures were constant for him.
He was complaining about chest pain, and which he never complained about before. And at first I'm like, oh, it's just anxiety. Like maybe your anxiety. He's like, no, it's like not anxiety. It's like legit chest pain. So when we went to the doctor right before he left for his trip, she did a few tests, and she's like, you need to come back right when you get back from Puerto Rico. You need to come back in here, and you need to figure out what's wrong with you.
Andy, I am.
One of the things that we're understanding now is that bipolar disorder is not just a brain disorder. It's a total body disorder. And people have all sorts of things that go wrong medically. And there does seem to be sort of a total body and heart aging, if you will.
Then he was in Puerto Rico, and then it gets really ugly. Shouldn't have been there. He was super depressed, didn't have his meds, didn't want to board. He was just completely tripping. His wife told him, don't do it. Just stick your foot in the water. Then you can cancel it and get home. It's part of the rules. You got to at least get in the water to say that you were there. Otherwise, you get fined or something. He just wanted to come home. And then Slater talked about it.
Andy didn't show up for his first heat in Puerto Rico. And I just heard he was at like a signing at a surf shop, and he was so bloodshot red in his eyes that they didn't even want him there.
When you're going through withdrawals, you don't want to do the thing. You sure as hell can't go surf. So I think he was sick, blown out in his hotel room, didn't want to leave, and, you know, was just trying to get back home. And going through withdrawals, you know, you're sick. So your body's going through a whole lot of stress.
Doctor saw him, gave him a couple of bags of saline solution, and said he felt a lot better. Then we heard that he had left and jumped a flight, went to Miami, and was trying to get home.
So he went to Miami, and it was like Halloween, and apparently he partied with friends down in South Florida, just what he needed, right? But that's what he did. And then he said he was going to catch a flight, and the only flight he could get was to Dallas, and then Dallas home to Hawaii. So he ends up in Dallas, and he was too sick, I guess, to board his connecting flight for Hawaii, so he called home.
One day, it's me. I can't deal with this. I can't.
Wheelchaired off the airplane and into the hotel, and said he was so sorry for everything, that he was coming home.
You know, I know he was trying his hardest to get home, you know, thinking about his new child coming, you know? He wanted to be home really bad.
It's awful. I can't even tell you, watching it, I break down every time. He never made it out of that hotel room in Dallas. That's where he died. And Bruce was just a mess talking about it.
The last thing I heard was, went to sleep, never woke up, alone in a Texas hotel.
Could conquer any wave, but surfing champion Andy Irons has suddenly died.
It's a mysterious death of world champion surfer Andy Irons.
The 32-year-old died suddenly while on his way home to Kauai after the Rip Curl Pro Search event in Puerto
Irons'
Rico.
His wife is due to give birth to the couple's first child in 2 weeks.
Just how he died remains a mystery. Irons reportedly told his family he caught dengue fever in Portugal.
An autopsy report conducted by the Tarrant County Medical Examiner shows the 32-year-old had a heart attack.
Surfing phenom Andy Irons died from a combination of a heart attack and drug use, according to the New York Times.
The news sent shockwaves through the world of surfing.
I mean, the bottom line is he had a heart attack and he was loaded with drugs. And that was all she wrote. It was just a tragedy. It just sucked. On a bright note, Lydia had a baby boy, Axel, and he's just absolutely adorable. And then the next time they checked in on him, he was 7 and going to elementary school. And they showed his going back to Andy's funeral. It was a water surfer funeral in Kauai. It was unbelievable. There were just hundreds of people there on surfboards. It was crazy. Helicopters throwing rose petals out. It was just unbelievable. Tearjerker city.
Tell you that I love you so much. I miss you so much. I don't even know how to explain it in words how much I miss you. And I want to tell you that you're amazing, and I'm so proud of you, and I just wish I could hug you and hold you and kiss you one last time. And most importantly, I wanted to tell you about Axel. He's perfect. And you're gonna be so proud.
I mean, the whole thing was just so awful. It makes me sick. His brother pretty much summed it up with the final say.
Andy. I think about you every single day. Now that you're not here, I realize, you know, I'm alone in this world. Everything that you felt, I felt. You were my hero. Growing up, you still are.
God, it was so sad. Just so sad.
You know, my brother's always like, it's totally Nico. Go, go, go.
I loved that flick. Absolutely surreal. A beautiful piece. Just fantastic stuff. So well done. No joke. Kiss by God. Hell of an effort. Axel is in grade school now. Went to the same school his dad went to in Kauai. And I know that Lindy remarried. Bruce is one of the best surfers in the world, making movies, doing special events, etc., etc. He lives in Cali, and he's got two kids, Camila and Kobe. He's a badass. She co-founded a swimsuit company and does this Andy Irons Foundation charity. They still live in Kauai. Lindy and Axel, the little boy. Steve Jones and Todd Jones directed it. Great job by them. I loved every minute of that thing. It was so good. I watched it twice. I even had 34C watching it. We were both just absolutely pouring in tears. Another exciting kick-ass edition of Pharrell on the Bench Pod. Shake it. Hope you dug it. Can you dig it?
Want to be the next Daily Fantasy Millionaire? Dunk on your NBA DFS competition with DailyRoto.com and dominate on FanDuel and DraftKings this season. Compete with the pros with DailyRoto.com, Optimizer, and the most accurate projections in NBA DFS, plus lineup alerts, breaking news, late swap support, and much more. Save 10% on winning NBA DFS advice with promo code DUNK. Visit DailyRoto.com/dunk to learn more.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.